The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So today I'll give the fourth talk in the four-part series on generosity, Buddhism, Buddhist teachings, and generosity. And the topic for today is generosity as freedom. And one of the hallmarks, calling cards of Buddhism is freedom, liberation. And it's at the center of what Buddhism is trying to offer and trying to guide people to is an experience of profound, meaningful freedom or profound peace that comes with freedom. Peace and freedom are often considered synonymous. And and so how is it that generosity is an expression of freedom? Earlier in these four-part series, I talked about freedom, generosity as a practice. And then when we practice the generosity in order to understand oneself better, to understand where one clings, understand one's relationship to other people, one's relationship to oneself, there's a lot of learning and development and growth that can happen if you take on generosity as a practice, which means you might not necessarily always feel like you want to be generous, but you feel it's useful as a way of growing and developing. But also, generosity doesn't have to be a practice, but rather an expression of our freedom. It's a kind of a natural movement out of no longer clinging. The Buddha gave a description of a layperson who is accomplished in generosity, and this is the description. And what is the accomplishment of generosity? Here, a noble disciple dwells at home with a mind free from stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, one devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. So certainly, the person's on the practice, the work, to be free of clinging. Here it's defined as stinginess, but to clinging or holding on too tight. Giving freely, the idea and the connection between generosity and freedom. Open-handed. Open-handed, I think, means without any strings attached. Here. And then delighting in relinquishment. This word relinquishment is a very important word. In Pali, it's chaga. And it's sometimes translated as generosity. But it also has the meaning of relinquishment. And the word dana, which many of you know, is often the word that sometimes gets translated as generosity, doesn't really mean generosity. What it means is giving, the act of giving, and it means the gift given. And there's many motivations for giving that we can have. Some of them are not so salutary, and some of them are quite beautiful. But there's many motivations for giving, and there's many kind of gifts to give. But it's not necessarily imbued with generosity to give, because you can give out of obligation, you can give out of fear, you can give out of wanting something in return. Chaga is the word that's usually translated into English as generosity, but it also has the meaning of relinquishment. And relinquishment is kind of an odd word perhaps in English, because we don't use it that often. And it can maybe be associated with things like giving up, perhaps. Abandoning. But here, the relinquishment means giving freely, giving by letting go. And so it's not an abandonment, like almost like a dismissal, like I'll just, you know, relinquish that effort. But it's more an act of open-heartedness or wholeheartedness that expresses freedom and results in joy. So here it says, one delights in giving and sharing. So this is the, you know, one definition. And so what is that movement of relinquishment, of letting go, where in the letting go we feel wealthy, we feel rich? Is it possible? And the Buddha talked about the inner wealth, and generosity is part of that inner wealth. There's something quite beautiful that dwells in our hearts, or is our hearts, or can be in our hearts. And to discover that is discover inner beauty. To discover a peace, the lightness, an open-heartedness, an ease, like a refreshing breeze going through the heart, or like all the doors and windows are open in the heart. There's no defensiveness or fear or closed or contraction. And to feel that is to feel our wealth. It's worth a lot more than a lot of wealth. There's a story in ancient times, Buddhist times, of, I don't know if it's a king or a wealthy businessman, who left all that behind, left it to his family, I guess, and became a monastic. And since he'd lived a quite a wealthy life, the other monks said, oh, this guy's not going to last. You know, because it's a little bit, a little bit rustic to be a monk. You know, you're living in outdoors, you're living in a forest, and just a few things, and eating alms food and things. And this guy's not going to last. And then one day, the monks who were betting or saying it's not going to last, heard this former wealthy man off in the distance exclaim quite loudly, "Happy, happy, happy," something like that. And they looked at each other. Oh, yep, you see, happy. He's decided to go back to his old life. So they went and asked him, and he said, "No, I'm not going back. I'm just so happy in this life here, because here I don't have to lock my doors. No one's trying to rob me and steal my or want all these things from me. And I feel so much at ease and relaxed, and I feel peaceful in this lifetime." So perhaps that's pointing to an inner wealth that's possible, that he felt. When I was... the second time I went to Asia to practice, I went and ended up, I was going to sit a retreat with Upandita, Burmese teacher, in Nepal. And before the retreat started, I was wandering around the streets of Kathmandu, just waiting. And I came across a Buddhist kind of store that had Buddhist art and statues and books and things. They had a lot of those in Kathmandu. And in the window, one of them was a Buddha statue. And this Buddha statue really resonated with me. Like, wow, like really, I spoke to my heart, to something meaningful for me or something. I felt kind of resonated something really deeply with this statue. And I thought, I think maybe I should buy this. And, it said $100. And $100 for me back in 1985, I think it was, 84, was one-third of my entire wealth. And I was, in Asia for the duration. There was no particular plans to come back. I was there to practice, but I had very little money. But I thought, I really would like to have this. And so I was, for about 3 days, I walked by and look in the window and wonder what I should do. Should I buy it or not? And it was a big, percentage of my money, so I had to think carefully. And then on the third day, it occurred to me that the most beautiful thing that I know is a pure mind, is a cleansed mind, a mind that's not clinging to anything. And to see that mind, to experience that mind, to see one of the most beautiful things in the world, in the universe. And then when I thought about that, I thought, oh, rather than spending that $100 for this Buddha, I'll use it to support someone else so they could practice and experience that beauty for themselves. That's what occurred to me. And then, I don't know if it was that afternoon or the next day, kind of out of the blue, arrived my girlfriend from California. And she had less money than I had. But she came also to practice. So then that money that I had, $100, actually went a long way for how we were practicing and living, and was able to help her also to stay. And both of us ended up, I think, at that point, staying, I guess, almost a year in Asia, staying in monasteries and practicing. So this inner wealth that's possible. The idea of generosity being connected to freedom is also inherent in a very important teaching in, called the paramis, or the paramitas, the perfections. And these are 10 qualities of heart, virtues, which when they say when perfected, is the springboard for liberation. But in order for these qualities to be perfections, they have to be intimately connected to both freedom, freedom of heart, and compassion. So there's many beautiful forms of generosity, but they're not necessarily connected to freedom, liberation, not necessarily connected to compassion. But when they're connected, then it becomes a parami, which is very beneficial for ourselves. It builds beautiful qualities and becomes kind of a support and a stability and a foundation for a healthy and beautiful life. And so they talk about the perfection of generosity as being the first of these 10 paramis. And when I hear the word perfection, I get a little bit troubled. Now you're going to be a perfectionist. You know, what does it mean to do it perfectly? But when I think about it, the word parami also kind of has a connotations of that which takes you to freedom, takes you to the other shore. Para means other. And I think of it like taking the bus to San Jose. If you want to go to San Jose on the bus from here, you want a bus that takes you to San Jose perfectly, which means that it got you there. It doesn't matter if it's an old bus or a new bus. It doesn't matter too much, perhaps, if it's a slow bus or a fast bus. You know, the fact that it gets you to San Jose, it's perfectly done its job. Or if you want to drive over to Berkeley on the Bay Bridge, usually the Bay Bridge does a perfect job in getting you across. And so the parami is that which perfectly conveys you, carries you, or expresses freedom and compassion. And it's quite beautiful that these two are woven together, freedom and compassion. And I kind of think of them as being inseparable, that somehow our freedom of heart that we have is, you know, is kind of openness of heart leads to the heart being sensitive, feeling, a feeling heart. And as we feel with our freedom, we feel the situation, the world around us, and it elicits our compassion. As we feel our compassion freely, as we feel our compassion fully, we will feel the places where we're not free. Because the places we're not free is where we suffer. It's where we cling and hold. And so the movement of compassion is to move through that and resolve it. Dissolve it. To find the freedom. And so this idea of compassion and freedom being closely connected is a very important one, I think, for me, certainly I think for much of Buddhist tradition. So here is a description of from Theravadan Buddhist text on the perfection of giving. The perfection of giving is stated at the beginning of the ten because it is common to all beings, since even ordinary people practice giving. And because it is the least fruitful of the other 10. And because it is the easiest to practice. I like this one. It's the easiest to practice. So to begin where it's easiest. Though it's not always that easy, but I think it's easiest in some ways, perhaps, this is my take, is because to the degree to which it requires something to do something physical, to do something in the world, action. A lot of the other paramis have to do with doing something. It's not necessarily an action, but transforming your heart. So, for example, the last parami is equanimity, to transform your heart so that you're able to go through life with a modicum of, or with equanimity and peace, without being caught up and reactive, is a much more hard thing to do than to offer something to someone. Or the ninth perfection is loving kindness. And to really develop loving kindness is not an easy thing to do. And to have it be a regular part of one's life, you know. So it's, but here, to begin where it's supposedly easiest. Giving has the characteristic of relinquishing. Its function is to dispel greed for things that can be given away. Its manifestation is non-attachment, and its manifestation is the achievement of prosperity. Isn't that interesting? And there's an idea, maybe it's a little bit superstitious, but the idea that as we give in this way, that actually we benefit from that ourselves. You reap what you sow. And so there's an ancient idea that actually if you want to become wealthy, you should give, be generous. Further, when someone asks for something, a bodhisattva, a person who's doing this practice, should reflect, this person is my intimate friend, for he or she now divulges their own secret to me. This person is my teacher, for he or she teaches me when you go, you have to abandon all. When you die, you cannot take your possessions with you. So when someone asks you for something, the idea that they're your good friend, intimate friend, because they're sharing something that's, here they have the word secret, something very private. I don't know if that's true, but the idea they're sharing some part of themselves to you, that's how you view them. And then you view them also as your teacher. Imagine that people are your teachers, your kids. Dad, I want... Because they teach you, when you go, you abandon it all. When you die, you cannot take your possessions with you. There's a story in the ancient Buddhist world of a monk who walked around in his patchwork robes. He had nothing but his bowl and his robes. He'd wander around. He was a famous teacher. He would teach and was well known for his practice. And maybe because he was well known, a local king one day gave him a golden alms bowl. And monastics, those things they're allowed to own, they receive. And, they're not going to resist gold bowl as much as they're going to, they don't think about it, it's just a bowl. So he was walking around, and one night he was going to sleep in a forest, and he noticed in the trees, kind of skirting around, was a thief looking at his golden bowl. And so he saw this, and so he went over and got his bowl and walked over to the thief and handed it to him. And he said, "Here, you can have it." And the thief ran off with the bowl. And the monk went to sleep for the night. And the next morning, the thief came back and said, "Here's your bowl. I can't take it. And in fact, the fact that you could give it so freely has inspired me. And I'm here to become your student." So I don't know if it's a true story, but I will tell you a true story about a monk, Ajahn Amaro. I was a monk who lived in California for many years, beautiful man, and friend of many of us. And he, I don't know when, but maybe 10 years ago or something, he was given one of the kind of first kind of smartphones. I mean, he could do email on this thing, back long ago, ancient world. And it was it cost a lot, this thing back then. I don't know how much, a lot. And someone had given it to him. So I was with him, hanging out with him, and he pulled out his little thing and was checking his email or something, and I said, "Ajahn Amaro, what are you? You're a monk, you're renunciant. What are you doing with this expensive..." I have a little, I have a cell phone too, but I used to have a cell phone, it doesn't do anything except make calls, if you remember those days. And what are you doing with this expensive thing? You're a renunciant. And he said, explained to me, "Well, in fact, it was given to me, so I received it, and I reflected on it, and I felt it was okay for me to keep. provided that if anyone asked me for it, I would give it to them. So you can imagine what went through my mind. Well, to clarify, what went through my mind was maybe I should test him. And let's find out, you know, if he really means this. But out of respect for him, I thought, oh, no, I won't do that. But I kind of believed he would, if someone... He didn't feel like an inquisitive kind of guy. It is one of the most beautiful things in the universe that I know, is a heart that's liberated. A heart that is not contracted or afraid or tight, constricted, that's not resistant, that is just so open, all the doors are open, so open, that almost like it's so open that there are no walls, so open that maybe there is no heart. It's just like everything can flow so freely, it's a breeze through it all. And to be able to have some sense of that, that beautiful wealth, inner wealth or freedom or delight or ease or peace, and to encounter the world from that place, and then from that to allow the movements, the motivations that come from that to move from us into the world is a beautiful thing. And one of those things is the movement of generosity. To relinquish, not to give away or dismiss, but to relinquish in the sense of freely, completely opening the hand and letting go and offering. To give. If relinquishment has the connotations of giving up, then it has, I think, the beautiful connotations of giving up, which in the old days apparently meant not abandoning or surrendering. Giving up meant offering up onto the altar. To sacrifice used to mean to make sacred. And so there's something about offering up. There's something beautiful about coming from this freedom of the heart and offering and releasing because of what it does for us in here. As a parami, it's important to remember that it should also be connected to compassion, which means there has to be some wisdom involved in the giving or some deep seeing, because you can give freely and do someone a disservice. And so, you know, is it really the right thing for this person? Is it compassionate? Is it supportive? Is it helpful for this, or for a lot of people? Is it really help and support and be meaningful for many people or not? I remember, maybe this is maybe a little bit of a non sequitur, but I remember many years ago, I think I was 18 or something, I went up to Portland with some friends and... And this man who seemed like he was drunk and could smell his alcohol from his breath, looked kind of homeless, came up to me and said, "Can you give me a quarter?" And I looked at him and I said, "Yeah, I'll give it to you if you're not going to buy alcohol with it." And he stood up in a kind of very dignified way. It was beautiful, his dignity and nobility. He stood up, he looked me right in the eye, and he said something like, "It's my choice what I do with it." You know, and I realized that somehow when I told him, if you don't buy alcohol with it, I had kind of demeaned him. I kind of, you know, as I was this kid, you know, I was kind of like telling him what to do. And I felt that he expressed his beauty in that moment. Something beautiful, and maybe it was a little bit misguided. Maybe I think he probably went off and bought alcohol anyway. But there was something very touching for me. And so this idea of compassion and respecting people's dignity and nobility in the giving. So we're not helping people when we give, but as I talked about last week, perhaps we're serving, we're supporting. Or even better, in Mahayana Buddhism, when they talk about the perfection of giving, giving becomes perfect when there is no giver, there is no gift, and there is no receiver. Not the fact that there is nothing at all, you sit at home on your couch, do nothing, but rather that in giving, there's no self-consciousness of being the giver. In giving, there's no sense there's even a gift being given, and there's no receiver. There's an intimacy, there's a flow. And so I'll end this talk and this series on generosity with a story from the Chinese Zen tradition, where a monk asked another, what is it like to be the great bodhisattva, the great embodiment of compassion, the great deity of compassion? And the monk who answered said, it's like taking your hand at night to rearrange your pillow. So it's a little bit maybe cryptic answer, but here, what is it like to be the great compassionate one, the one who helps the world, the suffering of the world? What it's like is as unselfconscious and as free as when you are feeling a little bit uncomfortable with your pillow at night, you go and kind of bunch it up or move it a little bit and then let it be. And in doing that, perhaps at night, there's no you, there's no pillow, there's no doing. It's just kind of so self-unconscious, so free and so easy to do it. Can we go through the world where are the best qualities of our hearts, generosity being one of the primary ones, is offered to the world in that kind of ease and unselfconsciousness and beauty? It is possible. And to reach that, to do that, takes often a lot of practice. And we can practice generosity, and we can practice mindfulness and meditation and order and ethics and all the different aspects of Buddhism so that we can do the inner work to give birth to the most beautiful and wealthiest parts of our hearts, and then we can share it to others. May all beings be the beneficiary of our mutual generosity to each other. May we all take good care of each other. Thank you.